What's going down, podcast listener? Welcome back to the Symbiosis Now podcast. I'm Tyler Colombaro, and I'm the host of the show. And on this show, we like to journey into the conversational planes. We like to talk about it all. We like to experience what someone else has learned, someone else is going through, someone else has been through, someone else has already thought about and way past, and how they coped with that. Some would maybe call it a story, but it's so much more than that. Everyone has their own testimony, some would call it. Everyone has their own story. So to join us on this episode, we have someone to share their story with us, tell a little bit about how they do what they do and why they do it, and maybe even a little bit of who about. You know, who knows how far we'll go with the what's, when's, why's, and who's. We'll get into all of it on the Symbiosis Now podcast. Be sure to tell your friends, light up the fucking flames of the internet, and let the people know that the podcast is coming to a headset near you. We have a very special guest today telling us his story about how he does what he does and why he does what he do. His name is Derek Fleming, my man out there killing it in the streets of Reedley. And I don't mean streets by any stretch of the imagination. I'm even referring to the internet avenues, where he finds his facets of many different ways to write articles for different papers. It's amazing, whether it's sports, whether it's politics, whether it's about cars, rugby, or gardening, which, by the way, he wrote a book or two, and one of the books we discuss, so that's pretty dope. This man wrote a fucking gardening book, and he came to visit us on the Symbiosis Now podcast. I think enough is said. Without further ado, let us voyage into the yonder of conversation with Derek Fleming on the Symbiosis Now podcast.
Yeah, man, we're just chilling with my folks, man, you know what I mean? Having a little fun while we taking a little 15, 20-minute break from the Ujo.
Derek, what's up, man?
Not much. How's it going?
Doing pretty good, man. How's your day going?
So far, so good.
That's what I'm talking about. You amidst the writing sessions or what?
Oh, yeah. I've been at it all day.
What are you writing about, bro?
I wrote some football stuff, and I'm working on car stereo stuff today.
It's so crazy that, like, you write for all these different things, like, and, like, I don't know. I'm curious, like, who tells you what to write about, and how does that even start?
That can come about in a couple of different ways. Usually, so some of the people that I write for, they will send me a topic. So, for example, I write for a website called beardedbutchers.com.
Okay.
They are a butchery in Ohio, and they have their own product line going on spices and seasonings.
Oh, okay.
They typically will send me like a document that will have the title and then a couple of like sentences that they want used as headlines in the article, and then a whole bunch of keywords that they want used.
Right.
And from there, it's just a matter of kind of plugging the words in until you get the document put together the way that they wanted it. They use a program called Surfer SEO that it scores the article according to how relevant it'll be for search engine optimization. And so that one, it's almost kind of like a game at times of, you know, you're trying to combine words in a certain way so that you get the score higher, and you can kind of move sentences around to change the score. So that's one of the ways that I'll do it.
That's so interesting. That is not what I expected to, like, here right now. Like, that's crazy, bro. Like, that sounds so so in depth. Like, it sounds like there's so many pieces of the puzzle. Like, so not just anyone can do it. You have to kind of know how to read the map to be this writer for these different, whatever you want to call them, entities, agencies, whatever, right?
Yeah, you really have to have a good grasp of, you know, not only the topic, but how to put words together in such a way so that Google uses an algorithm for their search history, search optimization.
Right.
And so you kind of have to have an understanding of what Google Analytics is looking at when you go to put the articles together. And so that's a part of everything that I do is I'm always looking at Google. They change their algorithm all the time.
Really?
So every couple of weeks, they'll make some small change to you know, what they're optimizing. And so I'll have to go and change the way that I'm writing so that it meets up with what they're looking for.
Right.
So that's one of the ways that I do it. And then I have, I write for a guy who is based in Lithuania. He produces, I don't know exactly what his role is, but my articles end up all over the internet, on all a whole bunch of different websites, different people's names on them. That one is, he will send me like an email with four topics, and it'll be like review a Cobra dash camera or a radar detector, or he does home audio stuff a lot, so I'll do AV receivers and satellite speakers and stuff like that. He'll just send me the topic and that and the number of words that he's looking for, and everything else is up to me.
Right. So it's a little less structured than the other approach.
It's a lot less structured. Mm-hmm. But you know, and then there's kind of a balance between having too much structure and not enough structure.
Right.
So as an example, when I started writing, I write for a newspaper in Dallas. I write for an online daily newspaper. It's called the Dallas Express. When I started writing for Dallas Express, my editor basically told me, I want you to write about the Cowboys or football or sports or anything else you want to write about. And okay. It was like, okay, really? Because, and so I just started writing stuff, and it got to be kind of a hassle because I was having to keep track of everything, and I wasn't always getting paid for everything that I wrote.
Oh, wow.
And it was just very loosey-goosey and not fantastic. And then I've been with them for over a year, I guess. I think it's actually been longer. I think it's actually been 2 years.
That is crazy.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Hey, man, so, like, it's like one day you're writing about fucking car audio, and then the next you were telling me how you were writing about organic gardening, and then the next you're talking about Thunderbirds and fire, or the Firebird. What, am I wrong? I'm not a car guy.
Yeah, and it's like that. I jump around, and it's, like, for example, this morning, I got up and wrote an article this morning, Hurricane Ian came through yesterday in Florida, and so as a result, they moved two of the college football games to Sunday. So I wrote an article about that this morning. One of the teams that happens to be playing is Southern Methodist University, their campus is in Dallas.
Oh, wow.
And I cover their football team, some paper.
Oh, wow.
So I got up this morning and wrote an article about SMU being moved to Sunday. And then I went and started working on car audio stuff. I'm writing a white paper for the website I write for is caraudionow.com. And so basically I'm putting together a white paper just looking at competitor websites and looking at how they do their reviews, what works, what doesn't, and with the idea of trying to improve the website that I write for.
Yeah, it's like you're a jack of all trades for information, though. Like, for you to jump around, it's pretty interesting that you can, like, write about so many different topics and you can dive into it. I mean, you know, most people would say, yeah, you just do the research and you write about it or whatever, but I don't know, to have the mind available for that, I think is a very special niche, clearly, right?
Well, yeah, and it's a lot of it comes down to training. When I went to college and got a bachelor's degree, my bachelor's degree is in government journalism. And so at the time, my plan was to work in government, writing information for the public. That's kind of what my goal was. So a lot of my college education was spent reading legislation, learning how to interpret the different vernacular that they use and figure out why these bills are important, and be able to turn it all around and accurately convey the information that people need, but at a middle school reading level.
Yeah,
so
we need that.
It's approachable to anybody.
Yeah, we need that out here, dude. For
and,
sure.
And I really believe that the time that I spent learning how to figure that stuff out, learning how to do that research, is the reason that I'm able to do this freelance stuff where I'm jumping from one topic to another, often things that I have absolutely no experience with whatsoever.
Now, you just said the word, though, freelance. Like, I feel like often, you know, you've seen me around, like, I work at, like, a hardware store, and then I work at, like, a bar, and I feel like
right.
I have to kind of bring my own freelance nature to these jobs, believe it or not. Sometimes there's not enough resources to get the job done, maybe, and you just have to improvise, whatever, man. Like, you know, sometimes it's, like, it's kind of rough. So that being said, like, you have to just adapt on the fly,
Yeah, and that, you know, you said it exactly, it's adaptability, and that, you know, throughout the course of my life, I've had a lot of different bizarre jobs, and I've often had several jobs simultaneously.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's just, you know, you got to do what you got to do to pay the bills. But, you know, at the same time, there was a period of time where during the day I worked in a fabric store, and at night I ran a gas station. I had graveyards at a gas station. And so, you know, I was at work 16 to 20 hours a day, 5-6 days a week. But it was always something different.
Right.
And you know, and that's, there are a handful of things that I really like about freelance work. The biggest one is that when I've got something I need to do, or I want to take a day off, or I want to do whatever, I can make that happen. I don't have to ask anybody for permission. I just have to make sure that I get my work done. And as long as I'm getting my work done, I can take time off whenever I want.
Man, and now, like, the world, I mean, whatever you want to call it, like, most people kind of know more what that's like now because of the pandemic, because everyone would, like, work at home if it was a possibility to do so. They kind of, like, mimicked your lifestyle for a little while, it sounds like, you know?
Yeah, and, the pandemic was kind of ironic because I was already full-time freelance working at that point in time. I didn't have a job to go to. And so everybody around was freaking out about, you know, working from home and lockdowns and being home all day and never going anywhere. And it's like, yeah, that's my life. I don't ever go. I walk to the grocery store, or I walk to the bar, and other than that, I'm working at my house.
It was probably the only way to convince people in the end, like, really, is to make some, you know, to have some kind of catastrophe happen and people to actually be like, oh, wow, I don't have to necessarily go to this brick and mortar every day. But I was also going to ask you, like, did you have more competition during the pandemic because of the fact that so many more people were maybe out of a job, like everyone was saying, or at least just at home more and more willing to do online work? Did you have, like, does it work like that? Do you have competition, I guess, is, like, the question?
I have had times since I started doing it. There have been a few periods of time where where competition has become an issue. When the pandemic hit, I was working pretty solidly with a group of companies. I was pretty well established, and so it didn't change a whole lot for me. What I did see right off the bat, right away, I used to do a lot of legal writing. I wrote for two different attorneys. One of them was in Florida, the other one was in Philadelphia. And immediately, I mean, in March of 2020, they shut their offices down. And that was the last I've heard from them. So that was kind of a big blow, because it was, you know, it was probably a couple of $100 a week that all of a sudden I had to find something to fill in. But honestly, since I've started doing the freelance stuff, when I first began doing it, getting paid appropriately for my time was very challenging. When I started out, I was often writing for less than a penny a word. I mean, making $4 or $5 and taking 2 or 3 hours to get a project done.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, bro.
So it was brutal like that. But at the same time, it was just, you know, it was something that I needed a little extra money. It was a little extra money. And I just put my head down and did what I had to do. And as time has gone by, it's gotten easier and easier to get higher paying stuff. To where now, if I look at something that somebody offers me and it's not worth my time, I just say no. And I always have stuff coming in. I can almost always pick up something new when I need to.
Right.
So it offers a lot of flexibility in that, you know, if I'm working with, you know, I had a guy that I used to work with. He was putting together a website that was all about houseplants. And so he wanted these little feature articles that just, you describe the houseplant and what its needs are and how to care for it and all this sort of thing. And when I first started doing it, it was fine. He was giving me big batches of them. I was getting paid. No big deal. As time went on, he wanted things to get more and more complicated, and he wasn't raising the amount of money that I got to.
Yeah.
And it was like, at a certain point, I just said, hey, you know what? You know, I'm happy to do this, but this is the money I'm going to need. And he's like, that's outside of my budget. I said, all right, cool. And no big deal. He went his way, I went my way. And that's, you know, immediately after I finished that project with that guy, I started a new project with a guy writing a book. And so last year I wrote a book on organic gardening, container gardening, that is on the bestsellers list on Amazon.
Hey, what's it called, man? What's it called, Derek?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I don't remember what the title is.
You don't remember the title of the own book that you wrote.
I didn't write the title. I wrote the content.
That's what's up, man. That's crazy how I'm sure that works out. I'm sure that's wild.
It's got a stupid name. It's like organic container gardening or something.
That's not stupid.
It's something that I should remember, but I don't. But so yeah, I jumped right into that project, and that was something that I had never done before. It was really interesting going from short form reviews and stuff like that to having the freedom to, you know, really get in depth, you know, talking about water quality, for example, and really being able to get in depth with, you know, what is in tap water, why you should use filtered water when you water plants, that sort of thing.
Yeah, no doubt. Honestly, I'm super into gardening, though, so it's kind of funny that you, like, wrote a book. And, like, I don't know, like, you told me that all chill one day, and I was like, what? Like, this guy wrote a gardening book? Because I'm all about gardening, right? And, like, at the beginning, all the knowledge was through those books. Like, I didn't know anyone that would tell me their experiences or anything. And I still kind of don't know that many people, but I got a few buddies, you know, that we tell each other what's going on with each other's garden or whatever. You know, like right now, anybody who knows cannabis, it's harvest season. It's that time, depending on what kind of strains you're working with. It may be that time. I know I've been harvesting, you know, it's kind of that time of year. So then you hear from someone else like, hey, you know, some of the indicas are coming off, like it, the way the season is, the way the sun is, just the climate, the way it's been, it's kind of been a hotter year, just different things that you hear, you know, you can make your own decisions, but, and some of it's just bro science for sure. You know, a lot of gardening hearsay is bro science-y, but I'm sure whatever you wrote is probably pretty legitimate, because if you're talking about organic, it's not like you're just talking about gardening. You're talking about something very specific.
The title of the book is How to Grow Vegetables in Pots and Containers.
I'm looking it up.
That's the short title, and the author name on it is Luke Potter, but that's just a pen name. It's not my pen name. It's the guy who purchased my work. That's his pen name.
What do you mean pen name? Like, that's not his real name?
That's not his real name.
What do you mean? Explain that. I've never heard of a pen name before, bro. I'm fucking...
Okay, so a lot of... This used to be a big thing with people who, particularly with authors that were writing controversial stuff. They would write something under their given name, and then they would have a different name that they would write under. So it was common in around the Revolutionary War and period. You had people who were supporting unpopular opinions in the writing, and it was causing problems. And so, you know, it's a quick way to throw people off of who exactly is saying this.
Do you think that that's an ancient, like, it's not just a new technology or way of manipulating people?
I don't entirely understand why this guy does it the way that he does it. I never bothered to ask him, because that's not, you know, I stay in my lane. My lane's to generate content. Once I get paid for it, I don't really care what happens to it.
Dude, Dude, it's just so crazy to think Luke Potter. It sounds like a gardeny-esque ass name, like a very gardeny name.
And it may be the guy's real name is Richard Bump, and that may be why he picked a different name.
Maybe, but at the same time, like if you were to write a paper and you were to quote the author, it's like this: you're quoting that author, but it's like that may not even be the real name. So it's not to say it's not a legitimate author. It's just now, how does that still maintain its legitimacy when we get into, like, you know, especially like when I go to college, I have to write papers. I have to like cite my resources all the time. I'm sure you have to do right. that too in certain situations, especially if you use quotes or some shit, right?
Always.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where the newspaper thing comes in really handy, because I did spend a lot of time. I've written for, I don't remember, three or four different newspapers over the years, and a couple of really bigger ones as well. When you do newspaper writing, you write in a different style. It's called AP format.
Uh-huh.
And so you have to do things very specifically or it's wrong, and that's just the way that it is.
Right.
And if you do things wrong, you get fired, because that's what happens. Very little leeway.
For real, they don't fuck around.
Yeah, and especially these days with everything being online, the paper that I write for now has a very robust editorial team. Now, they did not used to.
You mean like after you write it, they edit it, you mean?
Yeah, so I have three layers of editors that read my story before it gets published. They each have their specific role. Like, I have one guy who's an editor whose only job is to make sure that people's names are spelled correctly.
Oh, wow.
The only thing that he does. And, hey, you know, that's important, and mistakes happen. I do it all the time, and sometimes you just don't notice it. I quoted somebody yesterday whose name is Sharon Wilson. Seems like an easy enough name to spell. The problem is, she spells her name S-H-A-R-E-N.
Oh, different.
It's like, all right.
Like, oh, man, shooting in the dark here, but is it spelled this way? Like, I have to ask that too, man. Like you were saying about your own name, Derek. Like, it could be, like, spelled D-A apostrophe R-I-K, man. Derek, you know?
Yeah, right. And it happens. It's, you know, and it. Particularly in the news writing side of things, you get into some very interesting names. I cover rugby, for example, and a lot of the rugby players are from Europe and South Africa and the Middle East, and they have very bizarre names, very bizarre spellings, things that Americans just don't, you know, you don't see a lot of. I mean, you would be shocked to see how many different spellings there are for Muhammad.
Right.
I mean, it's just, you know, and then, you know, I had a situation yesterday where I was covering World Cup soccer, and I was talking about the Saudi Arabian team. Saudi Arabian names have a very specific format that the names go in a certain order, because it describes, you know, where you're from, where your family's from, that sort of thing. It's a very particular naming system that they use.
Yeah, it's cooler than the way we do it in the States.
Yeah. My editor and I had to go back and forth four or five times to get this guy's name right, because it was printed incorrectly numerous times, including on the actual roster for the Saudi Arabia team that's published on ESPN.com, had his name incorrect.
So, like, is it their fault? Whoever.
It's just somebody didn't double check it before they published it. The spelling is correct, but you have to put the words have to go in the right order, or it's not the same person.
Right.
So the guy that they have listed for this position is actually a sprinter, not a soccer player. And it's literally the difference of a capital letter.
So there's a lot to it. It's really in-depth. It's not like this person that is in charge of this or the people overseeing this, you called it the editorial department, they have to really be on top of their shit. Like, they have to be educated, clearly. Like, not just Google Translate. Like, they have to be educated to a degree to understand cultural changes in the way that things are communicated and everything, because that's hard to do. I'm not going to lie. Like, clearly in America, we just claim to do that. We claim to be the melting pot, and we're so good at understanding each other's culture, but we really still aren't that great at understanding each other's culture, clearly. You know, it's a lot to understand. You'd have to live in that culture. You have to submerge yourself almost in certain cultures to even get a glimpse of why it would be that way sometimes.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think rugby is an excellent example of that, and soccer might even be a better one, because, you know, soccer in particular, it's the biggest sport in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, we watch football games on television, have, you know, 50 or 60,000 people in the stands, and it's a packed stadium. That stadium, you couldn't even fit a quarter of the fans that show up to soccer games in an American football stadium. It's ridiculous.
For sure.
I mean, 150,000 people showing up for a soccer game. It's just crazy. But, you know, you would think with a sport that's that big, Americans would have a pretty good understanding of it. And people really don't. I mean, even myself, I played soccer for a number of years. And I constantly have to double check, you know, positions, spellings, different, you know, aspects of the game. Whereas, like, when I write about football, I rarely have to do that.
Right.
I mean, I know off the top of my head, I know the difference between a halfback and a fullback.
Right.
So it's kind of funny that, you know, some things that are immensely popular elsewhere don't necessarily trickle down into American psyche, understanding.
So they're kind of banking on someone to be from the local area or something, like, of that region to be the writer for that article versus someone in a totally different country trying to understand it and then translate it. But I'm sure there's so many articles that we've all read that were, you could say, almost influenced by another country then, in that sense, because it means that someone else could be, I don't know how else to say it, but, like, could be a little compromised, a little biased in their writings, but that's why they keep getting hired, maybe, you know what I mean, to push certain agendas through their writing, you know what I mean, and they live in a totally different country, and we would have no idea.
That's definitely, you know, a thing not only in other countries, but even among professional writers today. I mean, it's of all the topics that I write about, one of the things that I, at this point in my life, really refrain from writing about is politics. Which is very ironic because that's what I started out wanting to do. But I have a real hard time keeping my bias out of my writing. I mean, to the point where I don't really even notice that I'm being biased, and I'll kick it to an editor and my editor will send it back and say, you know, this is, I can't publish this.
So, like, are you still into politics? Do you write for politics still?
I occasionally write politics, but more often than not, I write crime and law stuff. Which I used to write for a website called Courthouse News, that basically for them, I would just go to the courts and pull up civil filings every day and write up a little paper that says, you know, so-and-so is suing so-and-so over whatever, you know. And then I would write a news story about, you know, whenever we had something that was important, when we'd have, you know, a company that was making a product that was unsafe and they were being sued because people were getting hurt by their product. That would be something that I would turn into a news story.
Right.
So, you know, doing those kinds of things, that's always been something that I've enjoyed. And here, since I started working for this paper, I've gotten onto a pretty good relationship with the criminal district attorney, in Durant County, which is Fort Worth, which is right next to Dallas. So I get a lot of stuff from them.
That is insane.
You know, and the freelance,
I think,
writing,
I mean, I don't know, the fact that you're just talking to, like, lawyers and, like, stuff and then writing papers, like, to me, like, by proxy, you know a lot, bro. Like, you could jump into a lot of conversations and just kind of hold your ground, you know?
It does. It does give you... it gives you the ability to bullshit your way through things.
Yeah, like a sommelier of fucking information. Like, you know, well, what you have here is British propaganda twisted in the form of...
It is really funny. I mean, for me, one of the things that has been really fun about the freelance stuff really is the fact that I get to spend time learning stuff. I enjoy learning, and it gives me an opportunity you know, just to learn stuff. I mean, a lot of this stuff, like writing for the Bearded Butchers, I have skinned a couple of rabbits over the years. That's about the extent of my butchering knowledge. I'm not even good at sharpening knives. I mean, it's just, that's just the way that it goes. Some people have their things, others don't.
Well, I commend you for even stepping into that realm, man. Like, that's what I mean. That's pretty wild to be able to jump into those things and not really ever actually have done it. Because there's a lot of things, like, I could think of, like, with winemaking. I study wine.
Right.
And I remember my professor would talk about that a lot, where he would try to make wine, like, often. Like, we'd make a different batch every year or whatever, right? And he would try to, like, maintain that and learn the whole process through. And some of them would be, like, failures, you could say. Like, in the end, just they had some kind of different bacteria growing, and it just changed the possibility of it being good wine, right? And and he would like to learn that process. But a lot of other people that have like a degree or a master's in enology, chemistry of enology or whatever, they don't understand how to actually make wine and have never actually made. No, they understand how to make it. They've just never made it. They've never seen the process go awry. They've just heard of the possible things that could go awry and what to amend it with. But like, they don't, if they were to go down to the floor and open a fucking barrel of wine and smell it and be like, ooh, I don't know what that smell is. They probably wouldn't know what that smell is, versus someone that's done this a lot would go down and smell it and be like, that's this bacteria, and this is what we add to somehow help that bacteria come out of the solution, you know?
Right.
So there's a lot of people, I'm sure, like you come across like that too, though, in the writing sphere, that like they try to make it seem like they know what they're talking about, and they probably try to jump into the realm that you do, but it seems like you could do it pretty good. I'm sure there's other people that are like, they do it, they're just not as sophisticated about it, maybe. They're just not as, I don't know. I don't know. You seem like real fluid with it, sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the butchering thing was kind of entertaining, because really how that one came about is they had started a website where they were doing YouTube videos, and their YouTube videos were getting a lot of hits, but people were asking for, you know, essentially the content on the video in a written format. And so they got a hold of me on that one, and I started watching their videos, and the first couple articles I wrote, it literally was just, you know, they'd have a video, you know, how to butcher a whole cow, and they'd show you how to make the primal cuts on the YouTube video, how to cut it down into the, you know, main, the seven chunks. And it, you know, it was like, wow, this is cool. This is the first time in my life I've ever actually seen this process. And now I got to write an article about how to do it. So I sound like an authoritative, you know, I have to have an authoritative voice about what I'm writing about.
Hey, but sometimes when it's something fresh, I feel like it's when I've explained or like understood and saw the beauty in something more than ever. You know, maybe I didn't experience, like really know the experience of understanding that. But when you see it for the first time, it's like you could describe it again. And maybe you have, I don't know, it's so new that you're really chewing on it. And you can describe the complexities that you notice versus someone that's seen it a billion times. They may be like, you could say like blind to the way that you could elaborate about it. Like they're just like, this is what you do. You cut it here. This is why. I don't know why. You just do it. But instead it's like,
see. That is a real thing, because, and I have that happen occasionally where I will be writing. I haven't written for this group in a while, but I used to write for a group that did do-it-yourself auto repair guides, which is something that I do have a background in. I've been working on cars my whole life, and I used to be a mechanic for a little while. So I have a good understanding of what I'm doing, which made it easy. But at the same time, there were times where I would read something and realize, you know, I left out a step or I skipped over the importance of something. Because it's just matter of fact, you know, this is how you do it. You know, when you're doing an oil change, this is how you do it.
Yeah,
just
don't skip a step and do a how-to video on YouTube. Yeah, like, how many guys do that shit, bro, where they skip hella steps, and you get there and you're like, dude, they didn't talk about this on there. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, right.
Listener, are you in the barbecue game? Do you like to smoke some ribs over a long 15-hour interval, and do that on a weekly basis, maybe, And maybe you need someone to come help detail all them dirty ass racks and clean out all the underside and bring it all back to life. Maybe you need your old barbecue that you haven't used in a while, that you miss using, fixed up. Maybe you need it even transported because you don't know how you're going to actually get it from one place to another and have it functional by the time it gets there. One man stands alone for the answer to these problems, and that is Ray Balladares over at Barbecue Ray's Detailing and Restoration Services. Ray Balladares, the owner and operator, is a good dude. And he actually really, really knows his shit. So I would highly recommend you hitting him up if you need your barbecue reassessed and rearranged. He's open Monday through Friday. He could do barbecue pickups and drop-offs. He can clean or detail your barbecue and all around it. He can fabricate and design some new shit to fit your barbecue needs. He can troubleshoot your electrical and fuel problems. And he can even teach you how to season that grill, baby. If you're interested in this man's services, give him a ring-a-ding-ding at 559-397-5440. And I'm going to leave his information in the description, along with his Instagram handle, which would just be BBQ Ray's Detailing, where he posts all his cool content of all his barbecue upkeeps. So Central Valley, whatever your needs are, contact this man and tell him you heard about him on the Symbiosis Now podcast. That's Barbecue Ray's Detailing and Restoration Services, located in Reedley, California, servicing the greater 559 area. So give Ray a call so he can put the U back in BBQ. What's going down, podcast listener? I imagine that you drive a car when you're out and aboutin'. You might even have a motorcycle, per se. And I think that most people that live in the society we live in have a home of some sort. On those things, do you have insurance? That is my question to you. And if you do not, it seems like it's time to get you some. What are you doing out there listening to a podcast? Because if you are, at the same time simultaneously, you could be calling Alfredo Vargas over at Academy West Insurance to provide you with top-notch service. Give him a call at 559-638-3800. Do you not have a license? That doesn't seem to be a problem. He can set you up. Do I know how? I have no idea, but he can set you up. He claims to know. Are you anything like me? And when you were younger, got into some trouble, had a DUI, and needed an SR-22 insurance? Maybe? I hope not, but if you do, Alfredo Vargas over at Academy West Insurance can set you up with the free SR-22. You can find Alfredo looking sharp in the suit on 998 North Manning Avenue in Reedley, California, or you can give him a jingle down there at the shop at 559-638-3800. Be sure to tell him that you heard about him on the Symbiosis Now podcast, and he will set you up ASAP with all your insuring needs. Thank you, Alfredo, for sponsoring the podcast. And now, let's get back to the show, folks.
And so, on the one hand, I think that starting when I do projects where I don't really have a good understanding of what it is exactly that I'm writing, like home audio stuff and butchering are good examples, because I have very little experience with those two things, yet I write a lot of it. For me, it was kind of better because I went into it with a lot of questions. You know, it's why is this? What is this? How does this, you know, work? And knowing that I have those questions, the person who's reading the article is going to be having the same questions.
Uh-huh.
So it kind of directed me toward how to write, you know, my articles, particularly when I was just starting to get content up and they had, you know, no content available. It was really good to get a bunch of basic articles up about real basic butchering stuff, and it was kind of easy to write because I was learning it and just basically writing about what I was learning.
Right, and like you just said, like, it's so beautiful to think about it like that way. So when a problem presents itself, right, you just have to like pay attention, figure it out, and find and answer the questions that you have, and then write about it, because then basically the person that's reading it is going to have the same questions most likely, or some degree of the same questions, and you are there to answer them. But in a way, I could see that this is like, I don't want to call it consumer, like consumable information, but is it kind of like the stuff that you write about? Like some of this stuff seems like it's something that is, it's meant to only apply for that time period, and maybe that day or week, and then that's it, depending on what it is, though. Because gardening would not count as that. Cars would not necessarily count as that. Those things are pretty, like, standard concrete.
But a lot of the content that I do put out there is very, it's shelf-life sensitive.
Like sports.
You know, the car audio now stuff. You know, every year, the manufacturers are releasing new stereos, new speakers, new amplifiers. You know, and a lot of the time that it's really not that much different than what they had out the year before.
Right.
But it's not the same thing as what they had out the year before. So it, you know, it's always kind of fun. January, February, my workflow is kind of funny because around the holidays, things tend to slow down, which is always crappy.
Yeah, what are you supposed to write about, man? Like fucking malls and like the Santa Clauses in the malls, or what are you supposed to write about, man? I don't know.
So that gets a little crappy. And then January, February, all of a sudden, it's just a ton of stuff because you've got companies that are releasing new products, or they released new products in December just ahead of the Christmas buying season. And so now I've got, you know, three or four websites that I write for that all have new products that are basically the same thing as last year's product, but it all has to be updated.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a lot of housekeeping on those kinds of things.
No doubt, I'm sure. You were talking about earlier how, like, you used to write more about politics and then, like, you know some lawyers and all this kind of stuff, but, like, what about the future of, like, I don't know, our politics have been weird. Everyone always says they're weird. I feel like they've always been weird. I feel like it just depends on how much you give a shit about it all. And I think people are kind of more invested like a novella than ever. Like, they love their drama show, but they think it's not real. But anyways, long story short, I'm just curious about what you think it's going to be like in the future. Do you think it's going to be like, not to say like bad, like I don't want to be pessimistic. I have friends that tell me that you're too pessimistic. So I try to be like, no, I'm just saying it's going to be different, clearly. But look at the situation with just our presidents. And it's an upcoming thing. We know how there's so many things that change upcoming to an election. All of a sudden, certain laws are all of a sudden loosened and certain laws are strict, tightened. You know what I mean? It's a shit show. And then they start bashing each other. Like we've already started seeing.
Right.
So what do you think? Is that all we're going to see? Is it going to be pretty much the same thing?
My anticipation is that, well, let me put it this way. Here's a funny little story. When I started out in college and made the decision that I was going to go into news writing, online newspapers didn't exist yet. That wasn't a thing yet. But the newspaper industry itself was already in a free fall. They were already downward spiraling. And every single one of my news writing instructors in college started out day one, first thing in class, telling everybody in class, you know what? You kids are all stupid for sitting here in this class because by the time you graduate, there's not going to be a job for you. Because that's what the writing on the wall looked like at the time.
Right.
And while I was at, I graduated from Sac State. While I was at Sac State, we became the first university in California to go 100% online with our newspaper.
Whoa.
Everybody else would have little, you know, they'd have a part of an article and then you had to go buy the paper or whatever to get the rest of it.
For sure.
We did our paper 100% online my senior year, and we were the first ones in California to do that. And that was when it kind of started to look like things were going to change. I can say that looking back at what it was like sitting in a college classroom in the mid 2000 or 2010s, whatever it was, at the newspaper industry, and then what has happened now today, I don't think anybody could have foreseen that that would happen that way, that we would go, you know, it's gone full online now and there's plenty of money to be made in news writing and there's plenty of content out there. And people, I think, have a bigger interest in news these days because it's more accessible. So to get back onto the point of people's political attitudes, historically, it always swings back and forth. And if you stand far enough back looking at American politics, we're all fairly moderate. And ultimately, I think that we're going to see a lot of this kind of rhetoric that we have seen over the last 6 years or so of, you know, the anger and the blaming and that kind of stuff. I think that's always gone on. I think that these days, because of social media's involvement and then the amount of news that people can access, it is more in people's face. I mean, I remember when I was in college reading about the discussions that the founding fathers were having as the Constitution was being put together. And in your mind, you would think of these, you know, civilized, educated white males sitting around discussing this, you know, fabulously important document. The reality was you had a bunch of drunk farmers screaming at each other.
With their fucking wigs on and shit, because they all fucked the same whore down the street and they got syphilis.
Yeah. Like, they had gun battles over topics in the Constitution that, you know, they'd be sitting across from a table yelling at each other and somebody pull out a pistol and pull the trigger. And it was just mayhem. I mean, they were a bunch of drunk farmers that made this country happen. And, you know, we don't think of it that way. And it's, you know, you get far enough away from an event and it changes. You know, if you look at President Nixon and his impeachment and all of that, Watergate and all of that, that is kind of what people commonly remember Nixon for. What people don't necessarily remember is that Nixon is the whole reason that we were able to open up trade relations with China. Right. And I mean, if you think today about the amount of products, I mean, we're sitting here talking on phones that I guarantee you came from China.
Oh, for sure, dude.
None of that would have happened if it had not been for Nixon making it happen.
For sure. We also would have had probably a slower inflation rate, but at the same time, like, clearly probably. For resources, right? Like, it wasn't the worst idea. We didn't know it was going to become what it is now. I think there was a point where there were industries that were fully aware what it was going to become. Cheaper products, like, basically consumable items.
Yeah,
basically being cheap as fuck,
workforce that, you know, is the largest workforce in the world.
Right, but he also started the EPA, which is kind of crazy to think, because most people would be like, "What?" Like, yeah, he started the EPA, and he did something else too. He did a lot of shit, but he also fucked up. He was also being sketchy. But I get what you're saying. Everyone remembers that his presidency as a failure, and that he was being corrupt, essentially.
Right.
And he kind of was, but I mean, hey, so was every other president, right?
I mean, he definitely, and that's the difference is Nixon got caught.
With his dick in his hand.
Other people weren't. He just got caught.
For sure. Same with Clinton, right?
It happens all the time. I mean, we're still seeing news stories today coming out about the Obama administration's use of the FBI and the IRS in the 2020 presidential election.
Right.
In the 2016 presidential election, I mean, they were targeting Republicans, anybody who was associated with the Trump campaign. The Obama administration was legitimately using the structures of government to influence an election.
Oh, for sure, dude. Like,
it failed, but, you know, at the same time, the goal was to tank the Trump campaign. And they're so hellbent on it, they're still doing it. I mean, the AG in New York is never going to quit. You know, that guy's, he's just insane. It doesn't even make any sense anymore.
Right, it doesn't.
I mean, to be honest, I never really cared how much money Trump paid in taxes anyways.
Pay in taxes, bro. I don't really give a fuck what every other one else, like the people that make a lot more money. I don't really give a fuck what taxes they pay. I would hope that it wouldn't be like they get not taxed at all making such good money, but I definitely don't I don't ascribe to any specific thing with the taxes. I just know we're getting taxed hard, son, down here.
Yeah, we are. And it's kind of funny because one of the areas that I spent a lot of time writing at when I was working in government was budgeting. Which is about the most boring possible thing in the world.
It was until now, where things the inflation rate makes everyone a budgeting expert all of a sudden.
Yeah, and you really start to see the differences in kind of how some of these things work. I mean, I remember when the Occupy movement was going on, I was working at the state capitol in Sacramento. I worked for an assembly member in the state capitol. And so I remember we were having discussions about taxes, and there were all these news stories about, you know, this major corporation or this billionaire or whoever is paying, you know, 3% in taxes or something. And when you read the article, the first thing that, because of my background, that I would notice is that they were really only looking at, you know, your federal taxes. Well, you know, the deal is rich people have enough money to pay lawyers so they don't have to pay high taxes.
For sure.
That's just how it goes. You know, what those stories were not capturing is that there are other taxes that rich people are paying that are significant. I mean, you think about the businesses that they're owning and the payroll taxes they're paying, the, you know, benefits packages, all these various different things. Just the sales tax alone, I mean, you know, you go out and buy a $180,000 car, the taxes on that are ridiculous. It doesn't matter how rich you are, you're still paying those taxes.
Right. It's so crazy. I mean, like, not to make it all about taxes, but it's so wild to think that without them, where would we be? And with them, where are we going? You know, it's...
Yeah, and you know, and that's, I think that one of the reasons that it is a good thing that the majority of Americans are more of a moderate political belief is it will never go too far in either direction. You know, we saw last year there were a lot of cities, a lot of democratically led cities that made the decision to remove funding from their police department.
Right.
And so that's, you know, that would be one of the consequences of reducing taxes too drastically is you would lose your ability to fund your police department. Well, every single one of those cities that did that has now increased taxes to rehire police officers because crime spiraled out of control. So, you know, we kind of have that. There's always going to be that balance. There's going to be the people that, you know, want higher taxes, people who don't want higher taxes. And I think at the end of the day, we'll all kind of fall into the middle of, you know, providing services and making things happen without making people slaves to their jobs any worse than it has to be.
Right. And I'm not trying to go over the edge here, but is it socialist to tax things and to fund things by taxes? Because in a way, you're funding something. And yes, the money, the lot of money, I mean, just like everything, I feel like in its subcategories of our Treasury Department and blah, blah, blah. I feel like that money, though, ultimately gets kind of, you know, allotted for a specific reason. And then, I mean, maybe everyone gets paid a little different depending on the situation, but in a way, it's still socially funded, and we don't really care where it goes as long as it goes somewhere. And a lot of cases, it's getting misused for sure. I mean, like just going to salaries or like paying other countries like we learned recently or whatever.
Yeah, you know? And the administrative expense thing is a big deal that a lot of people – I don't understand why particularly among – fiscally conservative Republicans, I don't understand why they're so lackadaisical about where some of this money is going when it goes into administration. When I worked at the Capitol, one of the things that really got me angry on a regular basis, I worked for a Republican. We had no money to spend. I mean, we were using used pencils, that kind of, I mean, it was no money. We had a bare-bones staff because we didn't have any money. Well, the money is controlled by whoever's in charge. Whichever political party is in power has the checkbook.
Right.
Well, California, you've got the Democrats, and it's always been the Democrats and probably always will be. And so Democratic offices got two-thirds more money than the Republican offices do.
Oh, for sure.
The same job. So we had five people on staff. Our next-door neighbor was a Democrat office. They had nine people on staff. We wrote the same number of bills that year as they did with only five people. And I'll tell you what would drive me crazy is I would be working along and look out the door and they're hanging out in the hallway talking about what they're going to do on the weekend for hours on end. they would go to lunch for 2 or 3 hours a day. And they're getting paid the same thing. They're getting paid more than I was, as a matter of fact.
Damn.
I was the lowest paid person at the Capitol.
Damn.
And it was really, it's really frustrating because it's like, you know, when you're a political party and you're in charge, you're representing everybody. And when you're going to start things right off the bat by saying, you know what, we're going to discriminate against, you know, this political party so that we're the only ones who can get stuff done, you're not representing anybody.
You're literally the House of fucking Representatives. What the fuck is going on? Like, you know?
Yeah. Right. And that was one of the things that really, that would get me angry. And I don't understand why more people don't look at it and say, you know, it is ridiculous that we're paying these taxes and our taxes are going to pay somebody $65,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year so they can hang out in the hallway at the Capitol building and talk about getting drunk on the weekend.
While I barely make it by and try to raise my family. Yeah, it's fucking wild, dude. I know. It sucks. It's like, dang, what am I doing? I should have that fucking job. I'm fucking up, you know?
And another example of it, my wife's a therapist. She has to be licensed, so she has to pay her license fee every year. She got a new tax on her license this year. She looked it up. This money literally funds the administration of a program that takes money and gives it to people who can't afford to pay their student loans. So it's not paying student loans, it's paying people to give money away.
Fuck.
And that's, you know, that's the kind of shit that if people understood that probably 40 to 60% of most taxes that you pay are just so that somebody has a job, we could get our tax rate down in a big hurry. But people don't look at it that way. I mean, there's a lot of complacency.
Man, the rent is fucking up and the rent is fucking due and everybody's feeling it out there, dude. My rent literally hasn't went up and it just finally went up because property taxes are up 300%, blah, blah, blah. You know, everybody's got their thing, but the reality is I think we're going to hear a lot more about it. And I'm kind of concerned. The last podcast I did, I was talking to my buddy Anthony, and he was talking about how, like, you know, the next guy that you went to high school with might be sleeping on your fucking lawn next week because it's getting crazy. Like, people are losing fucking everything in a matter of a couple months because they can't make it happen. Even though, like, that shouldn't be that way, it gets like that now, bro. There's so many people out there, too. Like, there's not enough support, but yet we're just giving money away. It's so ironic. It's weird.
Yeah, you know, it really is. Ever since the pandemic, one of the things that I found really interesting with the pandemic was the free food giveaways that got started. I mean, I remember that stuff happening before the pandemic, but it was fairly small scale. It seems like as soon as the pandemic happened, all of a sudden, there's all this food.
Dude, I used to work at a food bank during the pandemic, literally. At the college here at Reedley College, I worked at the food pantry, and it was popping, bro. We had so much good stuff. It was fucking ridiculous. It was off the hook, dude. I loved working there. Now when I go there, there's barely anything there. And I'm not trying to complain. I'm just saying, like, it's kind of weird. It's like, clearly the funding went down after the emergency went over. But it does mean that there's plenty of fucking food out there and available, though. That's the part that rubs me wrong.
Like, how can we have so many people who are starving, and yet we just have, I mean, boxes and boxes and boxes of food that basically is just trash? You know, it's giving it away. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, right here, right across the street from where I live, they do every Wednesday, they do a food drive that starts at 9 a.m. I'm usually up pretty early on Wednesdays because that's my watering day, so I got to get out and get my yard watered. I'm usually out there at about 6:30.
Yeah.
And about 6:30, 6:45, the first people start showing up to get in line for the food.
Yeah,
and it doesn't even start until 9 o'clock.
Yeah, dude.
And I mean, if you want some free shit, I guess there's...
Yeah, I think
it's easy to just sit in your car for a couple hours for some free shit.
Yeah, I think it's kind of become like partially a social outing for people, believe it or not, in the era we live, because it's just like people just want to go hang out and kind of wait in line for a little while. I think people need it, don't get me wrong, but also sometimes it's kind of like just something to do, you know, because I ain't got nothing to do for the next 3 hours. I'll wait in line for 3 fucking hours to get some ice cream and some junk, basically all junk food, you know, that's really not that nutritious, but it'll feel like I ate something for a couple of days, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I was a member of the Eagles Lodge here in Reedley, and so we had a lot of senior citizens there, and they would all go to the food drives, and then they would bring all the crap that they didn't want down to the lodge. And so the lodge has a full commercial kitchen, and so they just bring all this food, and we just load the refrigerators up, and it was like, you know, there'd be heads of cabbage and boxes of lemons and whole chickens and...
At least it was treated as like salvaging the resources, though. I feel like the newer generation doesn't look at it like that. It looks at it like, if I didn't pay for it, it's not worth anything. It's only worth what you paid for it. I feel like it's kind of this message that I get from the youth. Like, if they didn't pay for it, like you said, it might as well just be trash. But if you paid for it, all of a sudden this thing of Oreos has so much more value than if you got it for free. I feel the opposite. Yeah. I feel like if I got something free like that, oh, it tastes so much better, you know?
Yeah, exactly. The best joint is the free one.
But there's something wrong about it, bro. Like, just being able to, like, not work or not do anything maybe, or be down on your luck, but be able to just eat, like, a bunch of Oreos for free. Like,
well, you know, and there's a slippery slope there that is, you know, that's something that people need to be aware of, is that, you know, as our society is progressing closer and closer towards socialism, you inevitably will hit a tipping point where it's not worth people's time to work. I mean, you know, at a certain point, it's like, I can get all this shit for free, and I can get my rent paid for free, and I can get my electricity paid, and I don't have to do shit. So why would I?
While everyone else pays for it, because it doesn't get done from nowhere. Like, everyone else basically is paying for it and funding it somehow. But yeah, I get what you mean. There's no incentive to, like, work hard. A lot of old guys said that for years, and I think that we're finally really seeing it come to life now. But that's due to the inflation rate, I think, too. It's crippling. It almost makes you psychologically not be able to even... It's kind of like trying to compare to a computer or AI. As the inflation rate of the dollar bill just gains so much higher, when we're talking like we're in billions of dollars of debt, it's like trying to compute math quickly like a calculator when you're just a human. Not everyone can do that, you know.
And the reality is that we toss around these words, millions and billions and trillions, and nobody ever really thinks about it. $1 billion is an absolute tremendous amount of money.
Yeah, if it were in physical form, that would be more money than we could ever imagine seeing.
Our national debt is what, $1.3 trillion right now, or $11.3 trillion or something. I don't remember. It's over $1 trillion. That much money doesn't exist on the earth.
Yeah, it's a fantasy, you know, kind of, right?
It's just, at this point, it's like, who even cares? Because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's so heavy. You could never, we can never go back from this, like, type of shit. And we're trying to struggle to make up for it. And that's what's so crazy, is like, we never will. And that's what I mean. I think some people just throw their hands in the air and say, fuck it. They don't even want, it's almost like they were subdued it by submission, by not being able to do it anymore, just being like, this is just too much work for not enough money. I'm not down to anymore. There's no incentive to anymore. So almost like, whether we like it or not, sometimes this extreme hyper-capitalism, I think, does end not well. It ends like this. Like, it ends making everyone go, wow, well, fuck, there's no point in even getting it on this one anymore. It's fucked, you know, and no one wants to play the game anymore. And then what happens then? You know, what the fuck do you do with all these people then, you know?
Well, yeah, and I remember when they were first beginning to draft up the Affordable Care Act, and one of the original ideas had been to cap the salaries that doctors could be paid, which obviously that was a non-starter. That didn't go anywhere, but it was a really interesting discussion, because immediately you get doctors coming into legislative offices and telling the legislators, you know, if you sign on this, you're done, because I'm not going to do my job.
For real.
You know, I've spent 30 years of my life becoming a doctor. I'm not going to go and do that for $50,000 a year.
Right. So it does show, though, that there's always handshakes. I mean, and there's always these... you know, these little virtue nods to different groups, because if not, don't have your support group. It makes sense. It just sucks because it becomes this ugly machine that we can't stop, you know?
Yeah, you know, and it was kind of funny. Living in Sacramento was really interesting, particularly being involved in politics while I lived there was really an interesting experience. One of the things that you find out when you're in a place like that, we had this little, during the day it was a Chinese food restaurant, and at night it was a Chinese bar. And that's where everything that gets done in the Capitol actually gets done. It does not actually get done in the legislative offices. Everything in there is recorded. It's all on camera. Everything has to be documented. If you write a note on a piece of paper, that has to be documented. It has to be staged.
And you can't be, like, drinking in there and shit and
partying up. We did it all the time.
Okay, well, but I just mean, like, in general, they're out here at the other places, hanging out, having cocktails, really getting loose, sharing ideas, greasing the wheels, making phone calls.
Exactly.
I hear
and
you.
And that's what would happen. I mean, my role was to write press, so typically, if the assembly member went off site, if he left the Capitol building, I went with him. And so he would go, you know, we would get a phone call in the morning from a couple of the Democrat offices, and then we'd make a couple of phone calls to a couple of Republican offices. And next thing you know, everybody's going to lunch. And so they'd all get together and go to lunch, and sitting over, you know, beers and burgers, or going over to the Chinese food place and getting some kung pao chicken and martinis, and that's where the work got done. They'd sit there and be like, okay, well, this is what I want, this is what you want, this is what I'm willing to give you, this is what you're willing to give me, make the compromise, make it happen. They would go in there and discuss the votes that were going to be coming up later in the day on the floor, and they would know exactly how many people were going to vote before anything had even been discussed. And then you go into the Capitol building, you go into the auditorium area, and they read the bill, and then they discuss the bill, and then they vote on it. And it's this big theater because it's already been settled. It was settled yesterday.
Right.
But you have to have that theater for the public. So 100%. The public gets the idea that, oh, you know, our legislators are, you know, doing their job. They're in the Capitol and they're giving speeches and they're writing laws and they're doing their job. And the reality is it's just a bunch of guys sitting around in a bar getting drunk.
Yeah, and the theater, it makes it, everything that we see is the theater, pretty much.
Yeah.
Is like the theatrics of it to make us think that they're doing shit, make sure that something's getting done. Otherwise, we'd really lose our shit, probably, you know?
Probably. Well, yeah, and you know, it would become quickly evident how useless some of the arms of our government are.
Right.
And there were a lot of things that frustrated me about dealing with government stuff. Laziness was the biggest one.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure.
The last place that we lived in Sacramento, we were literally one block from the state capitol, from the Capitol Park. And right next door to us, in between us and the Capitol, is the Department of Education. And the Department of Education is this massive, multi-story building. Thousands of people work there. And they're just paper pushers. All they're doing is filing paperwork. Parking downtown Sacramento is metered. And so unless you live downtown, you have to move your car every 2 hours. So these people would park at a meter, and then every 2 hours they would go move their car. It can take you 30 to 45 minutes to find a parking spot downtown, sometimes longer than that. Every 2 hours, they're down there for an hour moving their car, every day of the week. You start looking at the amount of hours that all of these people are not working. They're still getting paid. They're salaried, so they're getting paid whether they do their work or not. And they're spending hours every day just parking their car. And the worst part about it was we were literally right on the corner. So they would park their car, and then they would get out of their car and go walk back to their office. And the whole time they're walking, they're bitching about how much they hate their job. And it's like, you don't even work. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Park in the state lot. But they wouldn't park in the state lot because they had to walk 3 blocks.
Yeah. So there's these loopholes that get taken advantage of. I guess it's the perks of the job, man. fuck it, right? But it sucks for those that pay the taxes to pay for this kind of shit, and knowing that it's a lot of it's getting pissed away. I hope if whoever does such a thing is hearing this, they feel a little dirty inside, because you should probably feel a little dirty inside. You just pissing away a bunch of people's hard work and money, just doing, you know, whatever you want, taking your sweet time, not making sure things are in order and right, but you could just slack off a little bit, fuck it, because you're just getting paid the same salary. Like, that kind of shit sucks, because if we all did that, we'd be in a fucked place. So thank goodness for those people out there still getting it and trying to be honest and trying to kind of, you know, not waste resources too much and think logical about shit and be incentivized for it, though. Because I can also blame partially the bureaucracy part of our government that doesn't really necessarily enforce or put a framework on a lot of things like that to ensure that those things don't happen, you know?
Right. Yeah. The complacency of it all is a problem.
Ah, the complacency. Hey, dude, Derek, you're the fucking man. I appreciate you coming on, man. I found your book on Amazon for the listeners. If you want to check it out, it's called How to Grow Vegetables and Pots and Containers by Luke Potter. The ink name, you called it, right? That's the ink name?
Yeah, that's his pen name.
Pen name, yeah. I found it on Amazon. It's like $10 paperback, man. $10. Go check it out. Learn how to garden.
Yeah, check it out.
But what else? You want to tell them to do anything else? These people listening?
Keep an eye on things that are going on in Dallas, Texas. It's an interesting place, and they've got some weirdos out there. So always kind of fun to see what's going on. Check out the Dallas Express for some entertaining, unbiased news.
There you go, people. Hey, Derek, you're the fucking man, dude. We'll be in touch.
Talk to you later.
All right, bro. Derek, thank you so much, man, for coming on the show. You're the fucking man, bro. I love talking to you. I think you're a wild cat. I think that the things you do are super inspirational. I think people listening to this show are feeling your vibe right now. I think that there's a lot out there, and there's a lot to explore, and it's really important to research shit, and clearly this man likes to research shit and write about it, and I love that. I think that it's an exciting time to be living low-key on the internet, even though there's a lot to be lived in reality. We have two worlds going on, folks, and we're caught in the middle of the two. I don't know where we're going from here. How about you? I had to make it into a rhyme because how about you? You know, what do you think? Let me know in the comments. Go find us on Instagram. Go follow us on all the platties. I appreciate Derek coming down, talking about what he does, how he does it, who he does it with, and what the fuck is going on in the world. Because he apparently knows a little bit, and I apparently like to know a little bit. And we all apparently need to talk about it. So, thank you so much, listener. Be sure to like, share, subscribe, do all that weird shit that everyone tells you to do. And this is Tyler Colombaro signing off for this episode. I hope to catch you on the next episode of the Symbiosis Now podcast.